Hi everyone, this is Berenice, the founder of the Earth School, and today I am doing something new for you. I am recording my last blog post for those of you who cannot read it or don't have time to read it, so that you still get access to the information. So this week's blog post is called 12 Negative Communication Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. You are a loving parent, and your child's happiness is dear to your heart. And yet sometimes you can tell that the communication breaks. At some point in the conversation, your child is not listening anymore, is snapping back or having a negative behavior of some sort. And here you are, feeling frustrated and powerless to fix the situation. What happened? There are many ways to communicate, and some of them are harmful. You might not realize it when you say it. You may not consciously know what can cause damages, but the words you choose and the way you express them have an impact on your children. Negative communication and its effects. Bad communication can lead to self-esteem, self-love, and self-confidence issues as it affects our identity. Maybe you can recall a moment where your husband, a friend, or a stranger said something that hurt you. Maybe it wasn't the actual words, but it did hurt you. Can you recall the feelings you had? You might have felt humiliated or insulted, misunderstood, or dismissed. Humiliation, insults, misunderstanding, dismissing, or even advice, they send a message. A message that the one talking is superior and knows better. Yet, good communication, one that brings a positive outcome, has to be a horizontal one. What usually happens between parents and children is that as parents, we think we know better. And maybe it's true. We have more knowledge, more experience, and more importantly, we can use abstract thinking. Now, at this point in the article, I did put an illustration of this that I'm gonna tell you. It is the Statue of Liberty. On the left, it's a concrete thought. So you see the Statue of Liberty, and the concrete thought is the Statue of Liberty. And on the right, you have the abstract thought. It's still the Statue of Liberty, but then the abstract thoughts are freedom, justice, or liberty. Abstract thinking and communication. This is a point I want to underline, even though I've done it in previous articles already. Before puberty, children cannot think abstractly. This ability grows as they grow up, but still, the way you think all the time, because we use it all the time, the abstract thinking, is different than their way. Children live in a concrete world, they don't get metaphors, and they certainly can't foresee the outcomes of a situation just by imagining them. So when you tell them things like, I can see how this is gonna end, well, they can't. We are quick to hurt our children, often without any evil purpose. Because we grew up being told to in a certain way, and we reproduce those patterns. Your number one goal as a parent is to keep the communication alive, to give a chance to your children to always feel connected to you. Yet there are many ways to break communication. Ordering, advising, mocking, judging, labeling, appraising. Yeah, I bet you didn't see that one coming. Appraising. Let's look at the communication roadblocks that the psychologist Thomas Gordon identified in his book Parent Effectiveness Training. He identified 12 roadblocks that cut communication. Number one is ordering, directing, commanding. These are the entry door to a power struggle. When facing an authoritarian adult, children have two options: fear or rebellion. None of them is an outcome you'd wish, right? It can also develop resentment in the child. When you command or give orders, your child feels like his needs are ignored, and he would be right. Here are some examples of sentences you might use when ordering, directing, or commanding. You must do this. You cannot do that. Stop it. Go apologize to her. That was number one. Number two is warning, admonishing, threatening. This category is the cousin of the first one. You just need to add some threat to it. The threat can be clear or implicit. It can be a prediction of a bad outcome. Either way, it is negative and usually has the opposite effect on people. Yes, when you do this, children and people usually tend to feel resentment, anger, and rebellion, and they might do exactly what they are told not to do. Some examples? You're really asking for trouble. If you go down that road, you'll be sorry. If you don't do this, then blah, blah, blah. You better not try that. I warn you, if you do that, blah, blah, blah. And I hope that you could picture myself, me talking because I had my finger in the air all the time. Number three, moralizing, preaching, imploring. A vague authority is at play here, the moral code, like a cloudy thing. What is underlying in the message is a proper way of conduct, a shoot and out solution that brings the child to feel guilty or inadequate. The reaction might be of rebellion again, as the child wonders who says that and why he should do it. There is the idea that the child isn't smart enough to know what's good or not and needs help. There is a notion of emotional blackmail because there is a hidden message of if you don't do it, you are not a good boy or a good girl. Some example of sentences that use moralizing, preaching, or imploring could be, you should go to kiss your grandma. The best thing you could do is blah, blah, blah. You're really out to blah, blah, blah. Or it's your duty to blah, blah, blah. I would also add here something important, and it's a quote, it's not from me, it's that moralizing and morals are two entirely different things and are always found in entirely different people. So you might have a high moral code, doesn't mean you need to moralize your children. Number four, advising, making suggestions, providing solutions. This is when your mighty experience can shine. You know better and you share your knowledge. Of course, as a parent, we see a situation and we think we know how to fix it. It is tempting to just give the solution. But you are not your child. You have a different temperament, a different history, and a different mind. So what worked for you in the past doesn't necessarily work for someone else. And giving advice implies that you think you're superior, that you know better. And last but not least, solutions and suggestions don't allow for creative thinking on your child's side. Examples here could be, have you thought about mm-mm-mm? Or what I would do is blah, blah, blah. Why don't you blah, blah, blah? Or have you tried blah, blah, blah? I just watched this Transylvanian movie with the vampire, you know, and he's like blah, blah, blah. So no, I have it in my mind. I'm sorry. Number five. Persuading with logic, lecturing, arguing. When you do that, you put yourself in a superior position. You know best. Just imagine a situation like this. How will your child respond to it, do you think? That's right, he will try to defend his position. He will argue and be in a defensiveness posture. You are also saying to your child that he didn't figure it out correctly and that he needs your help in doing so. Some examples? The facts are, or statistics shows that blah, blah, blah. Yes, but, that but is a killer. You know what with but? The thing is, when you say but, it kind of erases everything you said before the but. So yes, but means not yes. Another example could be, let's think this through. Or, do you realize that blah, blah, blah? Number six, judging, criticizing, disagreeing, or blaming. This is a very effective way to cut communication. When you judge, criticize, or simply disagree, you're telling your child that there is something wrong with him or what he said or did. In return, your child will feel incompetent, stupid, inadequate, or instinctively bad. The reaction. the reaction might be one of defense because nobody likes to be wrong. Well, at least I don't. You are either starting a fight or hurting your child's feeling. One of the consequences of these attitudes is that in the future, your child might not tell you something important or lie to you out of fear of being judged. This is not good. Examples. It's your own fault. Don't you think you ought to think of others? Surely, there's more to do than bothering your brother. You're being selfish. You're wrong. Now, I know that's a lot of information to take in. We are already at number 6. If you go to the blog post, you will get an opportunity to download our infographic that is very clear and gives you all of those on one page. It's pretty useful because there are a lot of them. And they're all important. Don't you feel already like you're using quite a lot of them and you're like, oh God, how am I going to change that? So let's get back to it. Number 7. Praising, agreeing, evaluating, positively, approving. I know, it sounds positive, isn't it? So let's see. When you praise or approve, you put yourself in the evaluator's seat. You're saying that you're superior and can evaluate what's being said or done. All those attitudes like humility. Praises are good things when done wisely. For example, when your child does or says something compassionate. But if you praise and approve of everything, your child will look for it all his life and will never be self-reliant. Examples? I think you're absolutely right. That's how I would feel if I were you. You're a good blah blah blah. You've done the right thing. Number 8. Name-calling, ridiculing, shaming, labeling. When you do one of those things, you openly show your disapproval. You also hurt the identity of your child, and the reaction may be volcanic. It feels unfair to the child when he hears it, and he will focus on the unfairness, not on the message you want to send. He will not hear the message. If it becomes a habit, the child might end up with one or several labels that will influence his behavior in a negative way. What's to remember here is that those communication messages can deeply impact self-esteem. For example, that's really stupid. You really ought to be ashamed of yourself. How could you do such a thing? You should be ashamed of yourself. And I did put this one twice. I just realized it now. I guess it was really important for me. I hate it when we shame children. And last one, that was dumb. Number 9. Interpreting, analyzing, diagnosing. This is a very tempting and common thing to do in our psychologist and self-development, self-help, self-improvement books. You would like to find the meaning behind the behavior, and you give yourself the psychoanalyst cap. What can happen here? First of all, again, it implies a superior posture. Let's say you're right. Your child will feel naked and exposed. He didn't choose to share this with you. And if you're wrong, your child will feel it's unfair. Both will end up with yet another fight as your child enters in resistance. Some examples of sentences you could use for interpreting, analyzing, or diagnosing could be, what's wrong with you is blah blah blah. Or, do you know what the real problem is? You don't really mean that. You're not just trying to make me look bad. So let me tell you a story here. I used to work as an educator with children and later with teenagers. Educator in Switzerland doesn't mean being a teacher. It means supporting people through their difficulties, like a social worker. I kind of assumed I knew better about the youth I worked with than they did. One day, as I was excited because I thought I found out the key to a youth problem, a wise woman asked me, what good will it be to that person if she doesn't find out for herself? Humility lesson, guys. Who took it bad? So I did the only positive thing I could think of. I helped my youth understand by herself. I'll never forget that moment, you know? It completely changed the way I worked afterwards. And it's really important. If you understand something or you think you understood something about your children, the best thing you can do is to help them understand it by themselves. 10. Reassuring, sympathizing, consoling, supporting. It might seem like a positive thing, right? And the attention is certainly noble. You want your child to feel better. So what's the problem? The problem is that your child will feel as he's not allowed to feel bad, that negative feelings should be fixed quickly, or that you don't understand how important it is. Sometimes a little thing for us can be huge for our children. Better to let them express their feelings than trying to make them feel better. For example, since things aren't really that bad, or don't worry, you'll look back on this in a year and laugh, or things will turn out okay, you'll see. Number 11, probing, questioning, interrogating. This is a famous one amongst parents, and I bet you do it all the time. Tell me, don't you? Because I know I do. Maybe every time I do something, I think everybody does it. It looks like that in that article. Thing is, questions kill the communication because the child feels interrogated and he might actually have told you more without your intervention. When you ask questions, you have an underlying goal, might be unconscious, to solve something or find a solution. We parents love solutions, so we gather information. But your question might have nothing to do with the concern of your child. For example, what makes you feel that way? Why? You're going to do that? When? Who? Where? And finally, the last one, number 12, distracting, diverting, humoring, changing the subject. This one hurts, my friend. Being dismissive is harmful and mean. It sends the message that what your child is saying is not important enough for your attention, or that you don't care about it. It says you are not interested in your child, nor in his feeling. He will experience it as a rejection. The attempt might come from a positive place, like wanting to take his mind off it, but the result is not what you think. Some example of sentences you might use here. Let's talk about that some other time. Oh, don't be so gloomy. Look on the bright side. You think you've got problems? Let me tell you about blah, blah, blah. So how can parents avoid those communication mistakes? Do you know what I read the other day? According to a survey in the UK, parents spend an average of 5 hours per week communicating with their children. I mean face-to-face communication here. Of course, as homeschool mom, we don't have this issue. We have a lot of occasions to communicate with our children, but do you? Do you take the time to communicate face to face with each of your children on a regular basis? Aren't you too busy? Isn't your mind on something else? Aren't you, like me, quick to come with a solution without taking the time to wonder if this is actually what your child is looking for? Stop talking. Start listening. The major issue in communicating with your children is that we do not listen. I've heard several times from clients things like, they don't listen to me, or I have to repeat things 1,000 times. But you know what? Children, like most mammals, they learn by imitation. So did you show them how to listen by actually listening to them? All the roadblocks that Gordon identified aren't here to make your life more complicated. I know it can look like that. The first time I went through that list, I thought to myself, what am I going to say now? And the answer struck me. I was going to say nothing. Well, I didn't become mute. You can still hear me from the neighbor's house when I'm angry. But I decided to consciously leave more room to my children so they can express themselves. I don't say it's easy. I have one son who barely talks, a girl who puts her nose in every conversation, and a younger son who cannot stop talking. Most of it making no sense at all, at least to us. And I'm sure you have your own piece of work at home. But it changed our family balance for the good. Our children feel like they are allowed to give their opinions and express their feelings. Doesn't mean they don't yell and snap and cry no more, but they learn that there is another, more positive way to communicate. Well, thanks for listening to this article. As always, I hope it gave you some line of thoughts to explore, as well as ideas to act and create a positive change in your life. I remind you that if you go to the blog post, you can ask for a copy of the infographic and keep all those 12 steps in one place so that you can have them all together. And to give you a quick reminder, so number one was ordering, directing, commanding. Number two, warning, admonishing, threatening. Number three, moralizing, preaching, imploring. Number four, advising, making suggestions, providing solutions. Number five, persuading with logic, lecturing, arguing. Number six, judging, criticizing, disagreeing, blaming. Number seven, praising, agreeing, evaluating positively, approving. Number eight, name-calling, ridiculing, shaming, leveling. Number nine, interpreting, analyzing, diagnosing. Number 10, reassuring, sympathizing, consoling, supporting. Number 11, probing, questioning, interrogating. Number 12, distracting, diverting, humoring, changing the subject. And I have one last thing to say. If we want our children to listen to us, we need to set an example. So I wish you the best week ever, a beautiful day, and I'll see you, or I'll speak to you next week. Bye.